Chapter 14. Innocent, trusting thing. It was a pleasant, useless, idle dream, that dream of mine for the maid with the bright eyes and simple, silly heart. But I was a foolish lad at that time. Then he will tell the tale of all your little wills and won'ts and particular ways, and as he speaks, turn to his wife with a placid smile. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is not true. He can't, he see can't be so cruel, and you are cruel to me, you are. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she was at last driven to desperation. Her natural common sense and shrewdness had seen all through the piece, how imaginary her emotions were. She felt herself to be weak and foolish in permitting them to rise, but even then she could not control them. Be agonized she must. She was only 18, and the long day's labor, her weariness, her excitement, had completely unnerved her, and worn her out. She was bent hither and thither by this tyrannical working upon her imagination, as a young rush in the wind. She wept bitterly. And now think how much I like you, apostrophe resumed Miss Aldclyffe, when Cytherea grew calmer. I shall never forget you for anybody else, as men do never. I will be exactly as a mother to you. Now will you promise to live with me always, and always be taken care of, and never deserted? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I cannot. I will not be anybody's maid for another day on any consideration. Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, no, no. You shan't be a lady's maid. You shall be my companion. I will get another maid. Apostrophe, companion, that was a new idea. Cytherea could not resist the evidently heartfelt desire of the strange-tempered woman for her presence. But she could not trust to the moment's impulse. I will stay, I think. But do not ask for a final answer tonight. Apostrophe, never mind now, then. Put your hair round your mama's neck, and give me one good long kiss, and I won't talk any more in that way about your lover. After all, some young men are not so fickle as others, but even if he's the ficklest, there is consolation. The love of an inconstant man is 10 times more ardent than that of a faithful man, that is, while it lasts. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Cytherea did as she was told, to escape the punishment of further talk, flung the twining tresses of her long, rich hair over Miss Aldclyffe's shoulders as directed, and the two ceased conversing, making themselves up for sleep. Miss Aldclyffe seemed to give herself over to a luxurious sense of content and quiet, as if the maiden at her side afforded her a protection against dangers which had menaced her for years. She was soon sleeping calmly. 2 to 5 a.m. With Cytherea it was otherwise. Unused to the place and circumstances, she continued wakeful, ill at ease, and mentally distressed. She withdrew herself from her companion's embrace, turned to the other side, and endeavored to relieve her busy brain by looking at the window blind, and noticing the light of the rising moon now in her last quarter creep round upon it. It was the light of an old waning moon which had but a few days longer to live. The sight led her to think again of what had happened under the rays of the same month's moon, a little before its full, the ecstatic evening scene with Edward. The kiss, and the shortness of those happy moments made an imagination bringing about the apotheosis of a status quo which had had several unpleasantnesses in its earthly reality. But sounds were in the ascendant that night. Her ears became aware of a strange and gloomy murmur. She recognized it. It was the gushing of the waterfall, faint and low, brought from its source to the unwonted distance of the house by a faint breeze which made it distinct and recognizable by reason of the utter absence of all disturbing sounds. The groom's melancholy representation lent to the sound a more dismal effect than it would have had of its own nature. She began to fancy what the waterfall must be like at that hour, under the trees, in the ghostly moonlight. Black at the head, and over the surface of the deep cold hole into which it fell, white and frothy at the fall, black and white, like a pall and its border, sad everywhere. She was in the mood for sounds of every kind now, and strained her ears to catch the faintest, in wayward enmity to her quiet of mind. Another soon came. The second was quite different from the first, a kind of intermittent whistle it seemed primarily. No, a creak, a metallic creak, ever and anon, like a plow, or a rusty wheelbarrow, or at least a wheel of some kind. Yes, it was, a wheel, the water wheel in the shrubbery by the old manor house, which the coachman had said would drive him mad. She determined not to think any more of these gloomy things, but now that as he had once noticed the sound, there was no sealing her ears to it. She could not help timing its creaks, and putting on a dread expectancy just before the end of each half-minute that brought them. To imagine the inside of the engine house, whence these noises proceeded, was now a necessity. No window, but crevices in the door, through which, probably, the moonbeams streamed in the most attenuated, and skeleton-like rays, striking sharply upon portions of wet rusty cranks and chains. A glistening wheel, turning incessantly, laboring in the dark like a captive starving in a dungeon, and instead of a floor below, gurgling water, which on account of the darkness, could only be heard, water which labored up dark pipes almost to where she lay. She shivered. Now she was determined to go to sleep. There could be nothing else left to be heard, or to imagine. It was horrid that her imagination should be so restless. Yet just for an instant, before going to sleep, she would think this, suppose another sound should come, just suppose it should. Before the thought had well passed through her brain, a third sound came. The third was a very soft gurgle or rattle of a strange and abnormal kind, yet a sound as he had heard before at some past period of her life when she could not recollect. To make it the more disturbing, it seemed to be almost close to her, either close outside the window, close under the floor, or close above the ceiling. The accidental fact of its coming so immediately upon the heels of her supposition told so powerfully upon her excited nerves that she jumped up in the bed. The same instant, a little dog in some room near, having probably heard the same noise, set up a low whine. The watchdog in the yard, hearing the moan of his associate, began to howl loudly and distinctly. His melancholy notes were taken up directly afterwards by the dogs, in the kennel a long way off, in every variety of wail. One logical thought alone was able to enter her flurried brain. The little dog that began the whining must have heard the other two sounds even better than herself. He had taken no notice of them, but he had taken notice of the third. The third, then, was an unusual sound. It was not like water, it was not like wind, it was not the nightjar, it was not a clock, nor a rat, nor a person snoring. She crept under the clothes, and flung her arms tightly round Miss Aldclyffe, as if for protection. Cytherea perceived that the lady's late peaceful warmth had given place to a sweat. At the maiden's touch, Miss Aldclyffe awoke with a low scream. She remembered her position instantly. Oh, such a terrible dream! Apostrophe, she cried, in a hurried whisper, holding to Cytherea in her turn, and your touch was the end of it. It was dreadful. Time, with his wings, hourglass, and scythe, coming nearer and nearer to me, grinning and mocking. Then he seized me, took a piece of me only. But I can't tell you. I can't bear to think of it. How those dogs howl. People say it means death. Apostrophe, the return of Miss Aldclyffe to consciousness was sufficient to dispel the wild fancies which the loneliness of the night had woven in Cytherea's mind. She dismissed the third noise as something which in all likelihood could easily be explained, if trouble were taken to inquire into it. Large houses had all kinds of strange sounds floating about them. She was ashamed to tell Miss Aldclyffe her terrors. A silence of 5 minutes. Are you asleep? Apostrophe, said Miss Aldclyffe. No, apostrophe, said Cytherea, in a long-drawn whisper. How those dogs howl, don't they? Apostrophe, yes. A little dog in the house began it. Apostrophe, ah, yes. That was Totsie. He sleeps on the mat outside my father's bedroom door. A nervous creature. Apostrophe, there was a silent interval of nearly half an hour. A clock on the landing struck 3, Are you asleep, Miss Alcliffe? Apostrophe apostrophe whispered Cytherea. No, apostrophe said Miss Alcliffe. How wretched it is not to be able to sleep, isn't it? Apostrophe apostrophe, yes, apostrophe replied Cytherea, like a docile child. Another hour passed, and the clock struck four. Miss Alcliffe was still awake. Cytherea, apostrophe she said, very softly. Cytherea made no answer. She was sleeping soundly. The first glimmer of dawn was now visible. Miss Alcliffe arose, put on her dressing gown, and went softly downstairs to her own room. I have not told her who I am after all, or found out the particulars of Ambrose's history, apostrophe she murmured. But her being in love alters everything. Apostrophe apostrophe, 3. Half past 7 to 10 o'clock a.m. Cytherea awoke, quiet in mind and refreshed. A conclusion to remain at Knapwater was already in possession of her. Finding Miss Alcliffe gone, she dressed herself and sat down at the window, to write an answer to Edward's letter, and an account of her arrival at Knapwater to Owen. The dismal and heartbreaking pictures that Miss Alcliffe had placed before her the preceding evening, the later terrors of the night, were now but as shadows of shadows, and she smiled in derision at her own excitability. But writing Edward's letter was the great consoler, the effect of each word upon him being enacted in her own face as she wrote it. She felt how much she would like to share his trouble, how well she could endure poverty with him, and wondered what his trouble was. But all would be explained at last, she knew. At the appointed time she went to Miss Alcliffe's room, intending, with the contradictoriness common in people, to perform with pleasure, as a work of supererogation, what as a duty was simply intolerable. Miss Alcliffe was already out of bed. The bright penetrating light of morning made a vast difference in the elder lady's behavior to her dependent. The day, which had restored Cytherea's judgment, had effected the same for Miss Alcliffe. Though practical reasons forbade her regretting that as he had secured such a companionable creature to read, talk, or play to her whenever her whim required, she was inwardly vexed at the extent to which as he had indulged in the womanly luxury of making confidences and giving way to emotions. Few would have supposed that the calm lady sitting aristocratically at the toilet table, seeming scarcely conscious of Cytherea's presence in the room, even when greeting her, was the passionate creature who had asked for kisses a few hours before. It is both painful and satisfactory to think how often these antitheses are to be observed in the individual most open to our observation ourselves. We pass the evening with faces lit up by some flaring illumination or other. We get up the next morning, the fiery jets have all gone out, and nothing confronts us but a few crinkled pipes and sooty wirework, hardly even recalling the outline of the blazing picture that arrested our eyes before bedtime. Emotions would be half-starved if there were no candlelight. Probably 9/10 of the gushing letters of indiscreet confession are written after 9 or 10 o'clock in the evening, and sent off before day returns to leer invidiously upon them. Few that remain open to catch our glance as we rise in the morning, survive the frigid criticism of dressing time. The subjects uppermost in the minds of the two women who had thus cooled from their fires, were not the visionary ones of the later hours, but the hard facts of their earlier conversation. After a remark that Cytherea need not assist her in dressing, unless she wished to, Miss Alcliffe said abruptly, I can tell that young man's name. Apostrophe apostrophe she looked keenly at Cytherea. It is Edward Springrove, my tenant's son. Apostrophe apostrophe, the inundation of color upon the younger lady at hearing a name which to her was a world, handled as if it were only an atom, told Miss Alcliffe that as he had divined the truth at last. Odd as he, is it? Apostrophe apostrophe she continued. Well, I wanted to know for practical reasons. His example shows that I was not so far wrong in my estimate of men after all, though I only generalized, and had no thought of him. Apostrophe apostrophe this was perfectly true. What do you mean? ... said Cytherea, visibly alarmed. Mean? Why, that all the world knows him to be engaged to be married, and that the wedding is soon to take place. ... She made the remark bluntly and superciliously, as if to obtain absolution at the hands of her family pride for the weak confidences of the night. But even the frigidity of Miss Alcliffe's morning mood was overcome by the look of sick and blank despair which the carelessly uttered words had produced upon Cytherea's face. She sank back into a chair and buried her face in her hands. Don't be so foolish, ... said Miss Alcliffe. Come, make the best of it. I cannot upset the fact I have told you of, unfortunately. But I believe the match can be broken off. ... Oh no, no. ... Nonsense. I liked him much as a youth, and I like him now. I'll help you to captivate and chain him down. I have got over my absurd feeling of last night in not wanting you ever to go away from me, of course. I could not expect such a thing as that. There, now I have said I'll help you, and that's enough. He's tired of his first choice now that he's been away from home for a while. The love that no outer attack can frighten away quails before its idol's own homely ways. It is always so. ... Finish what you are doing, if you are going to, and don't be a little goose about such a trumpery affair as that. ... Who is he engaged to? ... Cytherea inquired by a movement of her lips, but no sound of her voice. But Miss Alcliffe did not answer. It mattered not, Cytherea thought. Another woman, that was enough for her. Curiosity was stunned. She applied herself to the work of dressing, scarcely knowing how. Miss Alcliffe went on. You were too easily won. I'd have made him, or anybody else, speak out before he should have kissed my face for his pleasure. But you... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.